we are back in Nehemiah. And remember, he'd come back to Jerusalem from exile after hearing the people of God were in a bad way and weren't able to worship God as they should. All the city walls of Jerusalem had been trampled down and their gates were destroyed. So he trusted God and he got to work, him and the people of God. Remember, chapter 3 was that big long list of names? God's people got to join in with what he was doing. No one had to miss out. Instead, shoulder to shoulder, no matter if they were important or not, no matter if they were able to build lots or just a little, they got to join in. They didn't have to miss out. Building a people in Nehemiah's day was connected to building the walls of Jerusalem. With the walls built, it meant that the people could worship God rightly, without fear of attack. As it was, they were vulnerable, and God was not being worshipped rightly. But Christ promised to build his church, not a physical place, but a people. He promises that believers will have his Spirit living in them, that they can worship him. And when we trust in him, we get to join in with what he is doing here and now. This week, we pick up as Nehemiah faces opposition. We get to see that we too, we're to expect opposition, and that we are able to trust that God is all sufficient for us to persevere and to continue building his people. So Nehemiah chapter 4, it begins with Sanballat in verse 1 and Tobiah verse 3. Remember those guys? They've come up before, and they're back again, still up to absolutely no good. Remember chapter 2, verse 10. Sanballat and Tobiah heard that Nehemiah was to rebuild, and they were greatly displeased that, the verse says, that someone had come to seek the welfare of Israel. And then in 2:19, Sanballat and Tobiah and their pal Geshem, they heard that they were keen to get to work, so they mocked and threatened them. But Nehemiah's response to this was to trust God. In verse 20, I replied to them, the God of heaven will make us prosper. But this doesn't stop Sanballat and his boys from opposing them. Chapter 4, verse 1, Sanballat heard that the people of God were rebuilding. He was angry and greatly enraged, it says. He jeers at the Jews in front of all of his pals, calling them pathetic. What are they going to do? Rebuild this ruin? Really? Can't they see it's been completely flattened and burned? His pal, Tobiah the Ammonite, he's there joining in with the mockery. You know, what are they building? If a fox jumps on it, he will break down their stone wall. These walls are meant to keep out armies, but the paw of a fox, well, it's going to turn the whole thing to dust. Well, Nehemiah, he prays and asks God to turn their taunting back on them. And so they build the wall, verse 6. They've got to the point of the walls being joined up, the height's halfway up, they're partway there. Well, those who oppose the building, they hear that the repairing is going ahead, despite all of their mocking and their jeering. So they club together, verse 7, Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, the Ashdodites. And they're really angry. So they make a plot to go and attack Jerusalem. So the people of God pray and they set a watch, verse 9. But the propaganda of the enemies, well, it's got to them. The size of the task ahead is a massive one and it's been going well so far. But the mocking, the fear of attack, the sheer amount of rubble that is all around them that, you know, they need to rebuild. So Nehemiah organizes them into an army, taking precautionary measures, providing, you know, protection for the workers. Well, the plan of the enemies is thwarted for now. And verse 15, when our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had thwarted their plan, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work. And so the work continues, now a bit differently. The workers, they have swords in one hand and their work in the other, or swords strapped to their sides, verse 18. And the work gets going again, now more than ever, rebuilding the wall. And they're all instructed, because it's such a massive project, to come running when there is a trumpet blast, because they've been spread quite thinly. So they blast the trumpet, and then everyone will go and protect that section. So they get on to work on the wall day and night. Verse chapter 4 finishes off. That's what happens in this chapter. There's two big things that we can see from it. One is that we can expect opposition, and the second is that with God, we can persevere. So God's people, they can expect opposition then. We see three waves of opposition happening in Nehemiah chapter 4. Words, weapons, and from within. Opposition in words. Chapter 4, verse 1. Now when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews in the presence of his brothers and the Samaritan army. Verse 2, he asks 5 rhetorical questions. What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it themselves? Will they sacrifice? That just means, will they once again worship God in the temple as they had been instructed, making atoning sacrifices for the sins of the people? Will they finish up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that? Sanballat has been so opposed to the entire project. He has mocked and scorned. His threats haven't landed so far, but it doesn't stop him. His verbal ridicule here is to try and bring the morale of the people down. He wants them to believe themselves to be weak. He wants them to think that they are incapable. He wants their hopes to be like the piles of rubble and dust all around them. Well, Tobiah, he joins in too. Verse 3, if even a fox touches the wall, it will crumble. These walls, they're supposed to keep out armies, to fend off attackers. And yet, if a fox's paw can bring it down and it's going to crumble, all of the people's efforts, all they'll be wasted. Maybe you know what it feels like as you try to join in with the building of the people of God here and now, to have people to threaten you for your faith. In our Western context, we certainly know what it's like to see faith mocked in the public square. But when we are really, like, verbally opposed, that's so hard, isn't it? When a workplace fellowship puts on an evangelistic event and we invite colleagues and the whole event, well, it just gets mocked in the invitation thrown back in our face. Or when we share our faith with non-Christian friends or maybe even family and leave feeling like there is simply no hope. Like we are impossibly weak, like they will never listen. To try and reach out and to find ourselves laughed at can be so demoralizing. Those who oppose the building of walls, of the walls, Sanballat and Tobiah and the likes, and those who oppose the building of God's people, the church today, they have something in common. They drastically and they tragically underestimate God. Sanballat can't possibly, in his wildest dreams, think that God would ever bless his people in such a way that they would ever manage to build the walls of Jerusalem. In much the same way, Jesus was underestimated when on trial. The high priest and Jesus' accusers, they couldn't believe at all that Jesus would rise again from the grave. He was drastically underestimated. The second way that the people are opposed is with weapons. Or at least that is the plan. You see, verse 7, when the walls are going ahead, the Arabs and the Ammonites, the Ashdodites, they were angry. And verse 8, they all plotted together to come and to fight Jerusalem and to cause confusion in it. This is a total escalation, not only in the threat level, but in the number of threats. More enemies crawling out of the woodwork by the second. In fact, along with Sanballat and the Samaritans, Jerusalem would have been completely surrounded. You see, Arabs were settled to the south of Jerusalem. The Ammonites, they would have come from Ammon to the east of Jerusalem. Ashdod was on Judah's western border, and Sanballat and his company, well, they would have been to the north. Opposition on every side. The very real threat of violence. They've realized that their words aren't having their desired effect, so they ramp it up. They're so determined to put a stop to the people of God that they're willing to turn to physical violence. And you can really imagine that the people, they would have been so scared now. The threat of violence on every side. This is not something that many of us in the West, that we experience as a very real and imminent threat. But it is something that the majority of the church, throughout the majority of history, has experienced. Persecution remains an incredibly real threat to so many who are doing their bit to build the people of God where they are. So many of our brothers and sisters find themselves surrounded, cut off from the rest of the people of God, and living in danger, threatened with violence. Nehemiah, his people, they're opposed with words, with weapons, and the third wave of opposition, this time it comes from within. The enemy's influence has been so strong. The enormous scale of the task ahead, the lies that are being believed, it all results in verse 10, by ourselves we will not be able to rebuild the wall. They've started believing that they'll never rebuild the wall. Maybe we've been too ambitious. Maybe life wasn't so bad without a wall. Maybe if we had more time, maybe if we had more materials, more people, more strength. Couple all of this with the anxiety and the threat of attack hanging over them. It's no wonder that they feel overwhelmed. So easy for us today too. As we seek to build with Jesus, his people here today, it's so easy for us to become discouraged, to see ourselves as weak, to listen to the constant bombardment of lies from this world. The weight of opposition from the world will grind down even the strongest believer if they listen more than they listen to the word of God and if they seek fellowship with non-believers rather than believers. When they begin to feel isolated, surrounded, it is then most important for them to seek input from the word and from other believers. The really sad thing about this sort of opposition from within is that when we experience it, we can feel ashamed, guilty even, like we almost don't have enough faith. We can really find ourselves withdrawing from the word and withdrawing from other believers. But these are the exact things that God has given us to encourage us when the enemy seems to have the upper hand. They, if you like, they're the sword strapped to our side or the sword in our hand as we work with our other hand. Opposition from words, from weapons, and from within. The people of God building the wall experience these threats, and we too, we can experience each of them. And it can be so discouraging, can't it? Maybe you're being laughed at. Perhaps you know that if you speak up about your faith at your job, well, your job could be in danger and you could be sacked. Maybe you find yourself looking at this world and feeling so small, so inconsequential, the task of building the church too great and too unachievable. Well, in a strange way, that's to be expected. We are to expect opposition. It's clear as day here in this book of Nehemiah, when the people of God get busy building, others will oppose them. It's the exact same for us today. Jesus promised to build a people from all nations. And as we join in with that task, we'll find opposition. Have a look at John 15:18. Jesus says to his disciples, "If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you." Okay, so when we come up against opposition, it's to be expected. If the world hates what the church is doing, then that is because it too hated Jesus. Verse 19, "If you were of the world, the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Jesus is abundantly clear that we are to expect opposition. The Christian life, the life where we seek to become more like Jesus as we join in with him building his people, it's one where we are opposed. Let's hear this as the warning and the wake-up call that it is. If the gospel that we preach is welcomed with open arms from the world, if our Christianity is one that non-Christians are completely comfortable with us living, then we're probably not doing it right. Now, if you're anything like me, you'll hear something like this and think, great, gotta be opposed, bring it on, where's my opposition at? But that's not the case. Christians, we're not to go looking for opposition. We're to go building the people of God, preaching the gospel of the risen Christ, imploring people to come to him for their salvation, and serving the church, investing in Christian families, in our Christian family's relationship with God and one another. And as we build, opposition will find you. Don't listen to the people who tell you that Christianity is an easy life. The people who tell you that faith needs to be attractive to the world. No, we need to live in such a way that is attractive. Glorifying God and loving our neighbour will be attractive. But what we preach will never be comfortable. It is the truth that God is holy and we are not. It is the reality that we are in danger unless we come to him. It is the fact that we will be restless and dissatisfied unless we find our rest in God. We can expect opposition. And number two, with God, we can persevere. Have a look at Nehemiah's reaction to this opposition. His response to coming under these three attacks. The first, that verbal assault in verses 1 to 3, the mocking and derision. How does Nehemiah react? Verse 4, "Hear, O God, for we are despised." He prays to God. He brings his situation before his Lord. "Turn back their taunt on their own heads. Give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives." It's not actually the nicest prayer in the world, is it? And he continues in verse 5, "Do not cover their guilt. And let not their sin be blotted out from your sight. For they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders." And we continued to work on the wall. Nehemiah's response, well, it could be summed up as prayer and continued committed work. But let's look at this prayer in verses 4 and 5. It's very different to the prayers that we so often pray today, isn't it? Our way of thinking may make us kind of wince at such requests, cringe at a little bit of the type of extreme language that Nehemiah uses. We might think, well, that doesn't sound very much like loving those people, does it? It doesn't sound much like Jesus' instructions to love our enemies. But there's an important thing to note here. This prayer, and some of the Psalms in our Bible too, they aren't about us and our relationship with others. They are about God and his glory and his justice. And biblical prayers, well, they will express the idea that God will one day take vengeance. And that can be uncomfortable for us. J.I. Packer, he said that this was because the pure zeal expressed for God's glory in these prayers is foreign to our spiritually sluggish hearts. In our Bible studies and our sermons, we are often really rightly encouraged to love more. But there are some things that believers should hate. We should hate the things that God hates. We should hate sin. Sin, the cause of the loss of blessing and the loss of life. Being like Jesus doesn't mean being ambivalent or accepting of sin. Nehemiah's prayer is one that seeks the advancement of God's kingdom. And he prays for the removal of any obstacle and opposition. Verse 6, then the people continued working. Nehemiah's response to the escalation of the opposition and the threat of violence. Well, we can see what is going on, can't we? He prays and works. Verse 9, and we prayed to our God and set a guard as protection against them day and night. Nehemiah prays and he trusts God to do for them what they cannot do for themselves. And he uses what God has given him, the community of the people of God, to work hard. It's the old saying, trust God and keep your powder dry. It's a saying that comes from the days when ships had cannons and guns on, and it was essential that gunpowder was kept dry. Not an easy task to do on a boat, but otherwise the guns wouldn't be able to fire if they were needed. It would simply be irresponsible to say, well, I trust God, and then to leave the powder kegs open on deck in the rain. That wouldn't actually be trusting God with what he's given you. So Nehemiah, he prays and then sets a guard to protect the people building. When we face opposition, let's trust in God and use what he has given us for his glory. Let's pray and gather as the people of God, doing all we can to protect one another from the opposition. Nehemiah's reaction to opposition from within is also really, really similar. He stations guards, particularly in the vulnerable spots, verses 13. And verse 14, he tells the people, do not be afraid. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. They take the necessary actions in order to defend themselves, and they remember their God, who is great and awesome. Facing opposition from within, they remember that they are unbeatable when they are doing God's will. And so with their trust in God, the people continue their work. Swords strapped to their sides, their trumpet alarm system put in place, verse 20, they keep going. The point is this, with trust in God, we can persevere. We can overcome opposition. As the people in Nehemiah's day were opposed as they built the walls, so we will be opposed as we build the people of God. But as they trusted in God, so we can too. We can do this because all opposition, including the ultimate opposition, is absolutely nothing compared to the marvellous victory that we have in Jesus Christ. You see, when Jesus rose from the dead, he defeated death. And with that victory, he overcame all opposition. He overcame the world, the flesh, and the devil. Three categories of opposition that the New Testament gives. Have a look at Ephesians chapter 2, verse 2 with me. Paul, writing to the church in Ephesus, he says, you once walked following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh. That's from Ephesians 2. The course of this world. That's the ways culture and society oppose God. There are ungodly trends in this world, materialism, desire for instant gratification, and more. These trends, they once ruled all of our feelings and passions, but they are now defeated in Christ. The prince of the power of the air. This means the devil, Satan. He's the leader of all that opposes God. He stirs up trouble all over the world and seeks to disrupt the work of the people of God, the building of his church. Jesus triumphed over him once and for all on the cross. The passions of our flesh and the desires of our body, Ephesians 2 verse 3 that is, they're not talking about our physical bodies as if being hungry or tired were a sin. The apostle speaking of our fallen nature, which Christ has subdued. We no longer have to be subject to the world, the flesh, or the devil, because Christ has overcome them. And with his resurrection, he defeats the ultimate opposition and freely offers us the same victory. But this, of course, it doesn't mean that we can just sit back with our feet up, does it? The people didn't do that in Nehemiah's day. They armed themselves. They prepared for the fight. And the New Testament, it describes the Christian life as a fight too. Think about 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 12. Fight the good fight of faith. What was Nehemiah's strategy for this fight? Trust God, prayerfully depend on him, and use all the tools available to work hard. Nehemiah's strategy, it relies on having a more realistic picture of who God is. When we see God for who he really is, we see that he is completely sufficient for us to overcome, to persevere in the face of all opposition. Our opposition underestimate God. But God is unique, great and awesome, verse 14. He hears his people, verse 4. He is righteous, powerful, holy, sovereign, unfailing. And verse 20, he will fight for us. So as we navigate this life and all the opposition we may face, let's trust in him, pray to him, let's be ready for the fight. Think about that picture of the workers on the wall, the sword in one hand and the work in the other. They're prepared for what might come. And think about that trumpeting alarm system in verse 20. Because the workers were separated throughout the wall, spread quite thinly. If one place was to come under attack, well, they would sound the trumpet and everyone would come running to help. When we face opposition, even opposition from within, the voice that tells us that we are weak and cannot go on, let's sound the alarm. Let's reach out to Christian brothers and sisters. Let them know that we're in trouble. When we hear the alarm from another part of the wall, let's be the type of Christians who rush to help our family, rush to help them overcome opposition. Let's encourage those who are struggling. Let's resource persecuted churches. Let's continue to build the church, armed to the teeth, with the certainty that God will fight for us against the world, the flesh, and the devil. And let's trust his promises that he will sustain us through opposition, whether it's words, weapons, or opposition from within. If you're listening to this and you are troubled, maybe you're really aware just of a particular way in which this week you have sinned, and you feel the weight of guilt sitting heavily on you. Or maybe this week you felt particularly tempted and you know that you're feeling weak and you're this close to giving in. Lift your eyes to the God of heaven, who is great and awesome and will fight for you. Do not fear the world, the flesh, the devil. This week instead, sound the alarm. Let's reach out to the people of God and continue the good work of building his people. And let's do so with our swords. The word of God is called sharper than a double-edged sword. Let's do so with it fixed to our side, open in our hands. Maybe you're listening and you're just concerned that you aren't facing opposition. Well, get building the people of God. Opposition will find you. Jesus told us that we're to expect opposition if we are his disciples. Let's not be discouraged or disheartened when we are finding this life hard. When it feels like the opposition is just too much for us. Let's keep our eyes fixed on the God who is so much more sufficient for the fight than we are. And with him, we can persevere. We can work to build his people. And we can fight this good fight.